Good afternoon, everyone. I'm introducing Ben Hutchings. We'll talk about what's new in the Linux kernel since what's in Squeeze.
And Wheezy, even?
What's in Wheezy. And what's missing in Debian. So.
I'll start with the obligatory biography. Maybe not obligatory. I spend my day working as a professional software engineer, been doing that for 15 years, and I've been a Debian contributor for the past 10 years. And for about 5 years now, I've been working on the Linux kernel in both of those roles. In my day job, I'm maintaining a NetDriver for a hardware company, Solarflare, which is a sponsor of the conference. And I've working on more core kernel code as necessary. I'm a member of the Debian kernel team, and currently I'm doing most of the work on the packages in unstable, aside from supporting specific architectures, specific ports. I'm also maintaining the stable update branch for Linux 3.2 as used in Wheezy. That's maintained on kernel.org and goes through review upstream. So, the Linux kernel is released early and often. It's released about 5 times a year before you, and that's the major stable releases. And there are updates with bug fixes every week or two. Some of the features that turn up in these releases aren't quite ready, either because they haven't been fully debugged, or there are some bits still to fill in, or you need new user land, and that's one of the things I'm going to talk about today. Wheezy, as you probably know, has the Linux 3.2, which is now pretty old, current version being Linux 3.10. So the good news is, we now have lots of new features in testing and unstable relative to Wheezy. And the bad news is some of them aren't really usable yet. So I'm going to go through a number of those features and talk about what's missing, what people might be able to do to fix that. The team device driver is an alternative to bonding. Bonding is a way of combining two or more network links to achieve either greater bandwidth, you use them all at once, or greater reliability. You use one of them, but if that goes down because the switch breaks or something else fails, then you can fail over to the other link. The bonding driver has an awful lot of code, and a lot of awful code in the kernel that manages this pretty much autonomously. The team driver is a re-implementation of that. That leaves a lot of the high-level control in user land, which we don't have at the moment. We have you can set up one of these devices with the IP command from IPv2. But to really get it working, you need some new tools, which are part of the libteam project. So there is an open bug to get this working. Someone has, in fact, started packaging that. If you want to make this work, that's the bug to look at. So there's a new major feature called transcendent memory, not to be confused with transactional memory. It's a kind of abstract storage for memory. So there are bits of this in what started, were initially added in Linux 3.0, but then more and more pieces have been added, and some of them are not in Wheezy. So this is a kind of extra layer of storage between the page cache, which is all the files and data that are held in memory, and your disk. It's expected that it'll be faster than writing to or reading back from disk, but not quite as fast as simply direct access to memory. So where is this storage really? Where are these pages really going if they go into transcendent memory? If you're running a machine under Xen, they could be stored by the hypervisor in some pool that's shared between all the virtual machines. It could actually still be in local memory, but compressed. Memory tends to compress actually quite well. You might remember back in the 90s there were these memory doublers for Windows, and this is, I believe, a similar sort of idea for Linux. And you can also have a cluster of machines share their spare memory space with each other. That's called Ramster. And that's not really done yet. It's still under development. None of these things are enabled in Debian kernels. Some of them probably could be, but it needs someone to really think about the configuration, what should be enabled, but before what needs to be left to local configuration. Are there any scripts that are needed for to set this up? So I've got a link there to an article in Linux Weekly News about which gives me more details about this. If you want to make it work, have a look at that. Send us a proposal to the kernel team. Right. So we have new graphics drivers. Of course, most of you are probably using one of the i915 Radeon and Nuvo drivers, and those have gained support for new chips from the three vendors since Wheezy. But there are also completely new drivers for several old and new and virtual hardware devices. Kernel drivers for graphics are good for several reasons. Partly they're more robust than the next, and you don't have this fragile handoff between using text mode and using X graphics. And if the X server crashes, then your graphics are not dead. On the other hand, if your graphics driver crashes, then the kernel has crashed and your machine is completely dead. So it's not all good. At least at that point, you do get a nice trace back on the screen, probably, because the kernel driver can switch back to text mode and do that. Another, I think, important motivation for this is that user mode drivers aren't really compatible with doing secure boot. You can't, user land should not be trusted to access hardware devices directly. It has to go through the kernel, so hence the replacement of the X drivers for various graphics hardware with kernel drivers. Unfortunately, the X drivers we have in Debian don't work with this at the moment. So if you want to make it work, go and join the X Strike Force, package the new drivers, or in some cases just new versions of the driver. Module signing is something that has been seen in Red Hat Enterprise Linux for a while now, and it's for them, I believe it's just been a way to check whether people are using unsupported third-party modules and then tell them they can't have support anymore. But now with the plan to support secure boot, that becomes more important as a means of as a security feature. So the in mainline Linux you can generate a key at build time, sign all the modules that are built alongside the kernel, and then either at build time or at runtime, at boot time that is, you can tell the kernel not to load unsigned modules. There's a major flaw in this, which is that this doesn't leave any room for out-of-tree modules. How do you get the key? How do you tell the kernel that those should be trusted? And there's a certain amount of controversy about how exactly you do that. There's if you actually want to make secure boot work, we don't just need modules signed, we also need the kernel image signed, we need assigned bootloaders, and we probably need to disable some features like access to dev mem, which is how the X graphics drivers access the hardware, and which can't be allowed because that would undermine secure boot. So there's a meeting on Tuesday where hopefully we can discuss whether Debian can make its releases bootable with secure boot. So the discard feature. Probably many solid state disks and other flash devices support this discard operation. The way that flash is managed means you can't simply do random writes, and you need somewhat more capacity on the physical flash than the operating system and the file system see as being there. And the device can work more efficiently the more spare capacity it has. So if the file system tells it that the free parts of the disk are free by issuing a discard operation, then it becomes more efficient. It can be faster, and its lifetime, its working lifetime, will probably be longer. It's also possible to have thin provisioned storage servers, which pretend to have more capacity than they really do. And this more or less works because when you set up a server with so much disk space on the SAN, you're probably not going to use it all. And on average, if you know that on average your servers are going to use 60% of their disk, you can maybe allocate initially 70% of the disk space you pretend that you're giving them. But that only works again if the file system tells the storage server that it's about the free space on the disk. So in order for this to work, of course the hardware needs to support it, the driver needs to support it, the file system needs to support it, and any layers of storage in between them, like LVM and RAID, need to make discard work. And so I'm mentioning this here because Linux 3.7 finally added support for this in the MD RAID layer. It does need to be explicitly enabled as a file system option and as an option in those storage layers. And the Debian installer isn't doing this by default. There are reasons why you might not want to do it by default, but at the moment there isn't even an option to do that. So there's an open bug for this. If you want to get discard working by default, or at least make it easier for people to set up, go and look at that bug. See what there is to do. So another interesting feature which is being incrementally implemented is containers. In fact, we had containers before. A kind of a lightweight virtual machine. If you use KVM or Xen, then each virtual machine has its own kernel, its own dedicated memory. Well, that can be sort of varied using a balloon driver, but there's an awful lot more dedicated resources. Whereas a container uses the same kernel for both the host and the virtual machine, but everything in the virtual machine has limited privileges and limited use of the physical machine's resources. And this has been done before, and we had this in Debian with the OpenVZ and Linux vServer patches. The trouble is that these are quite intrusive to the kernel. They have to change memory management, file system, networking, the scheduler, all of which are changing fairly quickly in mainline Linux as well. So these projects have had to work very hard to keep updating to the two later versions of the mainline Linux. And they've not been able to support every kernel version. And so eventually with Wheezy we had to drop these patch sets. However, this is all being implemented in mainline Linux now, mostly by the same people who did OpenVZ. And it's being done in a somewhat more flexible way. It's being done possibly in a more robust way because they're talking to the upstream maintainers. But it's slow. The development has been fairly slow. I think it's nearly there now. In Linux 3.7, we now have user namespaces, which allow you to have a root user inside a container that is not the same thing as the root user for the physical for the outer host, which is pretty important. It's no good having containers if the users in the containers can break out of them. Unfortunately, there are still some flaws with the implementation of user namespaces. There were some early security problems with these where you could break out of a namespace. And also it requires all file systems which deal with user IDs to distinguish between the user IDs in the current container, or the current processor's container, and the user ID in the outer machine. In fact, every user ID that's used inside a container must have a number in the outer machine, but it'll be a different number. And so XFS still hasn't been changed to understand this, and that seems like that's quite a big job. So if you've got nothing better to do with your time, you have a lot of spare time, then you could work with the upstream XFS developers to make that work, and then we might be able to enable user namespaces and have container support in the next Debian release again. So Bcache has just recently been added in Linux 3.10. It has some similarities with transcendent memory, but it's also very different. It allows you to use a fast disk, like a solid state disk, as a cache in front of a larger disk that's not quite as fast. And it turns out this is such a good idea that it's been done several times over. There's also DM cache, which was in mainline Linux, and Enhance IO, which is not. But all three of these are available in Debian now. Bcache needs new userland tools. And in fact, someone has been working on a package of those. There's a bug number. I'm not exactly sure what the status of this is, but it might be that it just needs a sponsor. So if this sounds like something interesting to you, look at the bug, see if you can sponsor that package. So, for PC, for kernels that run on PCs, we're fairly used to having a single image that runs on pretty much all PCs. There are some differences where, I mean, you know, you may remember we, on the i386 flavor we have, on the i386 architecture, we have multiple kernel flavors for older and newer processors. But aside from the processor generation, you don't need a different kernel for a Dell machine or an HP machine. And unfortunately, this hasn't been the case with ARM for a long time. ARM, the company, makes these designs for just the processor, and they don't standardize things like interrupt controllers, memory layouts. There isn't even standard firmware, like on a PC you have a BIOS or now UEFI. Historically hasn't had that at all, although that may be changing in the near future. So every ARM kernel image had to be tailored to specific chips or even specific boards, which makes it quite difficult to support a wide range of hardware in Debian. We have to have a different flavor for each one, and because we build all kernels, we build all our packages natively. So we build all our ARM kernels on ARM, which isn't a particularly fast chips. Even today, they're not really as fast as x86 processors. So we end up with a large number of different kernel flavors and a very long build time. It's about 2 days to build all the ARM EL kernels currently. And there's no with that number of flavors, there's no prospect of being able to add interesting things like doing a real-time ARM kernel or a container supporting ARM kernel and so on. Anyway, the good news is this is changing. There's been a lot of work to describe how different ARM machines differ using something called a flattened device tree, which says that is a standardized description of all the different all those differences between machines, which the kernel will parse at boot time, and then it'll start running the right bits of code for whichever machine it's running on. So only the device tree needs to differ between machines. That's the idea, in a way. So currently in the ARMHF port, we have an ARMMP kernel, which is supporting Calzada, Freescale, and Marvell chips. And there are more likely to be coming along soon. The TI-OMAP chips are sort of supported, although apparently not all of the drivers are working correctly in a multi-platform build. But that's in one or two releases, that should be good. You may also remember a certain person going on and on about the importance of the all-winner chips found in ARM-based tablets. That's also partly supported. You can use you can use a serial port and the Ethernet port. As yet, there's no storage drivers, which is a bit of a problem. But there is work upstream to get these drivers included and supported in a multi-platform kernel. So that's the kernel sorted, right? But we still need an installer that knows how to install the bits on these all these various machines. And unfortunately, that is still going to need specific support for specific machines. Similarly, with the bootloader, generally they'll have a bootloader installed. It might be necessary, which is U-Boot, but they might need a second stage of bootloader, or they might need some configuration. At the moment, this isn't easy to do. It's possible to do, but you really need to be a real enthusiast, read up on all the details. So if you want to make this work, or if you want to make Debian work on new ARM systems, talk to the ARM porters, talk to the Debian installer team on the Debian boot list. And there's another problem, which is most of the GPUs on PCs are now supported by free drivers. Intel and AMD actually provide documentation. NVIDIA doesn't, but their chips have been quite successfully reverse engineered and supported by the Nouveau driver. Unfortunately, the same isn't true on ARM yet. That being said, there are I think 3 or 4 reverse engineering projects for the different GPUs that are out there, which have some success. They're not really ready for production yet, but if you want to make Debian on ARM, you know, a usable free desktop environment, then you could have a look and join those reverse engineering projects. So that's about it. There are an awful lot more features that have been introduced, but most of those are drivers and file system features which pretty much just work. You don't need to do anything particularly clever. Or they're already handled by the userland package, which is already in Debian. So, any questions about any of those or other features that you're interested in?
We have 15 minutes for questions, so if anyone has a question, please ask.
Hi, as a non-kernel guy, sometimes I need to try to build my own kernel and a Debian package. Are there any plans to make that easier for people who don't do that all day?
So you build a custom kernel package. That is pretty easy already, isn't it? You just make their package.
I mean, if you download the source and then...
Or are you talking about building a custom package from the Linux source package?
No, from Debian sources. Source.
Sorry?
From the Debian sources. Sometimes it gives a very mysterious error message and you don't really know what to do.
You're talking about you start with apt-get source Linux, is that what?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, if you want to build a custom kernel, it's much easier to do apt-get install Linux source. And then you use the make deb package command to build your kernel. Actually, editing the Debian source package of Linux is it's pretty complicated. I understand that, I don't recommend that you do that. So the kernel handbook, there's the Debian kernel handbook package, and the kernel-handbook.alioth.debian.org explain the sort of recommended ways to build a custom kernel.
Are there any other questions?
You mentioned that there are various tools need to enable the new features. Can you also say something about the tools needed to enable the user namespace features and other namespace features? Are they available upstream, and what about the Debian status?
Well, I would assume, I haven't actually looked at this for a while, but there's a package called LXC, which stands for Linux something containers, and I would assume that is going to make use of user namespaces, but I don't know whether it's up to date and ready to use them yet. Obviously, because we haven't enabled them in the kernel, then due to the conflict with XFS, then that can't work quite yet.
Any other question? Well, thanks, Ben, and thanks, everyone.